Well, tonight I'm very pleased to be welcomed by a bit of a legend in the big band music scene, Roger Fox from the Roger Fox Big Band. Good evening, Roger.
Yep, good evening.
So, Roger, I mean, your band's been going for 40 years now, hasn't it?
Yeah, 41 this year.
I'm just interested in how you came into the music scene. I mean, were you surrounded by music as a young man?
Well, both my parents are musicians. So my father was he started out as a violinist, but he played really cornet and he was a conductor. So he sort of came through the brass band scene. He was born in England. His father was also a conductor, cornet player. The father immigrated to New Zealand, conducted brass bands, and then ended up in Hara in the late 30s. Sort of came through there. In the Second World War, he was the conductor of the 3rd Division Band in the Pacific. So he sort of was a bandmaster of the army band. And my mother was a really great piano player, like a fantastic classical piano player, but also played really good sort of dance band piano. So that was always going on. So, you know, even as a young person, I was born in Christchurch and then lived the first 10 years of my life in the South Island. So my father got a job conducting the Invercargill Brass Band. We moved to Invercargill for 6 years, and then he got an offer to start school teaching at Gore High School, and he moved up to Gore, took over the local brass band, but started at the music department at Gore High. And then by that time, they had 4 children, so I'm the sort of oldest of the family. So, well, I've got an older brother, stepbrother, stepsister, but the oldest sort of the 4. He sort of felt, well, my parents sort of felt that it wasn't sort of Gore at that time, wasn't the place to be bringing up a family. Especially with sort of, you know, unless you're going to be sort of in the farming community in the 50s or early 60s in that area, it was basically nothing else happening. So he ended up by getting a job at Mana College in Podra, and we lived in Tetahi Bay. So all my early life musically was based around brass bands, Wellington Regional Youth Orchestra and things like that. But he played sort of dance band trumpet. My mother played piano, so I was exposed to sort of more of a dance band, jazz, big band, sort of Glenn Miller, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Early on, and sort of, you know, gravitated to that. But if sort of fate had had its way, and fate did have its way, I suppose. I mean, I was really being groomed for a classical trombone career.
Right.
And I'd gone through like playing in the New Zealand High School's orchestra and then the Wellington Regional Symphony Orchestra, and I got into the National Youth Orchestra four or five times, where I was the principal trombone. And I actually auditioned at my last year at high school, so I was about 18, for a position in the orchestral trainees, which was actually a fantastic thing they had going, and it was aligned to the then apprenticeship scheme. So instead of being a plumber or a bricklayer or a painter or something like that, the orchestra had this 30-piece apprenticeship orchestra, which was a 3-year apprenticeship.
Right.
And you got an apprenticeship wage. You went in every day and practiced, and you got tutored by members of the symphony orchestra.
Wow.
Well, they'd run 2 lots of 3 years of that, and I was auditioning for the sort of third lot of 3 years, and was accepted. So in the end of November, I was accepted in the national trainees. Naturally, I thought, well, I'm on my way for a classical trombone career. Did nothing over the summer, and then a letter came out sort of mid-late January, which went along the lines of, due to the previous 2 intakes, which is sort of a 6-year period, none of the brass and woodwind players had found positions in any orchestras.
Right.
They had then decided to cut out the woodwinds and brass component of the next intake and just take the strings. So my classical career finished there.
Before it started.
Yeah, so I picked up the paper, the Dominion Post at the time, and there was an ad in there which said brass players wanted Quincy Concert.
Oh.
Which was the rock band.
Yeah.
And famous rock band at the time. So I rang up. I was sort of basically told to come in and play that night. and was given the job that night. So basically my classical career, from getting one letter, the next night I was playing in a Quincy concert, and the rest is history.
Look out, look out, chillin' now, something's coming on. I shout it from the mountain up to anyone you see. Air of good feeling coming over me. And can't you say, hey Marie, and girl, can't you see? Air of good feeling coming over me. Hip hooray, let's smile for today. Air of good feeling.
There was a shop in Wellington and Manor Street called Lamp House, and in the front part of the shop was, well, that's what they sold lamps. But at the back, it was the only record shop in Wellington of any note which had a reasonably good jazz selection.
Right.
For some reason, at the back, they had a record department. And I walked in there one day, I'd have been 16, 17, I was sort of in the last year, a couple of years of school, and I just stumbled across this record. It had a whole lot of trumpets and trombones on it, and it was the Woody Herman Big Band, live at Basin Street West, which is you know, a famous club at the time in Los Angeles. And I brought it just because of the players on the front. I had no idea who Woody Herman really was. I knew it was a big band, actually, but I didn't really know, I didn't know the style.
Until
I got it home and put it on the stereo, and all hell broke loose, basically. It was like just... It was a live concert, and it was just some of the most fantastic big band playing I'd ever heard in my life, and that was it. That's what really clicked the switch. And then there was a few big bands. You know, once I got into Quincy's and started to play around a few of those bands, the radio bands and stuff like that, but it was really controlled by the older players.
Right.
A younger player, you know, I was 19, 20, so around that age. You just couldn't get a look in. They just wouldn't let you play. So, unfortunately, my father's family street had reared its head in me, and I was like, well, bugger you. If you won't let me play in the band, I'll form my own. That's what I did. Through my parents' help, I managed to buy in some arrangements from the United States. I had a go at trying to transcribe a couple of things I'd been listening to on record. And... I rounded up all my mates, because at the time there was five or six bands playing in clubs, like Quincy's, with horn sections. So I rounded up the horn players out of those bands who were interested, a few brass band mates, a few old classical mates, and pretty much the rhythm section from Quincy's, and arrived at the Wellington Musicians Club one Sunday night. It was February 1973, and basically I tried to keep one step ahead of the band, basically. That was it. So the band started, and off we went. And 41 years later, it was still there.
Thank you.
forgive my ignorance, but I'm just trying to imagine the mechanics of running a big band. I mean, you've got 18 pieces.
I run the band as a trust.
Right.
Nobody gets paid. In 41 years, I've never been paid. So, and not one, other than the international artists. Any of the New Zealand musicians who play on the band have never been paid. So,
right.
So it's run as a trust, incorporated trust, a charitable trust. And that was actually something my father suggested. It was like, he said, well, you know, really, realistically, how much money is there to be made, and how can you pay people to play on an 80-piece big band?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're playing in venues which you got a door charge, and, you know, one night it'll be fine, and everybody will come out, and you make enough money, and you pay everybody $50.
Mm.
Then the next time you play there, it decides to rain, and everybody's gone home for tea, you know, after having a day's work, and then think, oh, no, I can't bother going out. And then you're handing $12 to everybody because you only got half a crack.
Yeah.
And then human nature being human nature, it's like, well, it's not worth doing it for $12. Well, it's not actually worth doing it for $50. You know what I mean? So I made the decision right from the start that we'd run it as a trust. I've got a board structure, which some of the guys on the band are seconded onto. I've got, you know, outside... a financial person. I usually have the chairman, or, you know, that role is usually taken from somebody who's not involved with the playing side of the band. So, you know, it's a bit of a mix.
Yeah.
But that's how we've funded 9 overseas trips, you know. And it's also helped fund a lot of the New Zealand tours, and help fund a lot of the international artists who have come here. So without actually having that resource lined up, I mean, it hasn't always been easy, and, I mean, quite frankly, the band always needs funding. But that's sort of how we've managed to keep it going, and that's how we've managed to keep it going for 41 years. So.
That brings us nicely on to this Pledge Me campaign that you've got going at the minute.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, yeah. The Pledge Me campaign is, as you know, I've got a great American blues singer, guitarist Chris Kane coming out, and he's been here a couple of times before. Fantastic player, just unbelievable blues guitar player. But he plays fantastic jazz piano, plays unbelievable great clarinet and alto saxophone.
Wow.
But just sings and plays the blues to die for. Just a freak of nature when it comes to playing the blues.
Yes, to meet the high cost of living doesn't leave me too much time to live. Me and my woman both working 2 jobs, and all the overtime they get. That ain't it. That ain't no way for folks to live. Well, all this work we do for nothing won't be long, for something's gotta give.
For this tour we're doing, the idea was to record. So we want to record the material, and his American label is interested in releasing it in the United States. So for us as a New Zealand band to be able to get it released in the United States and have the sort of promotional muscle behind it is a big thing, because, I mean, that could open some serious doors for touring with the band and touring with Chris. But that all takes money, and we, you know, we just finished the 40th anniversary tour, which sort of pretty much sucked up all reserve money we had.
Right.
So that's where the Pledge Me campaign. So there's a Pledge Me campaign to help fund the recording of the Roger Fox Big Band and Chris Kane. We need about 6,000, which will cover most of the recording.
Oh, it'll be great to get you there and you know,
yeah,
get
well,
you over the line.
Well, we're recording in Wellington, and it'll be mixed in the States, and then we'll release it here. But as I say, the bonus with it is to have on the back of that, it'll be released in the United States, which is, you know, a big coup for a New Zealand band to be involved with something like that, but also opens many doors.
Totally, because the market out there is absolutely massive, isn't it?
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge, but, you know, I mean, getting to it from New Zealand is not easy. It's not easy for a, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 piece rock band.
No.
18 piece big band is almost impossible, unless you got something like Chris, who lives in the States and has got a real big following there. So his following, along with the recording, which we're the band on it, and a focal point with him, I mean, it could open more doors. So, I mean, that just all helps, you know. And, so, yeah, I mean, to get ready to record, and, you know, because people want to see him, we're doing three concerts. So I'm doing Palmerston North, then we come in and do Masters and King Street Live.
Yeah.
This is a great venue. I mean, that's a really good asset for a wide
Rebel. It's brilliant. There's something about the atmosphere of that place as well. Just superb.
And then we do a concert in Wellington on the Friday, and then we go into the studio Saturday, Sunday. So I think Marston's the 25th.
25th of September,
Thursday
that's right.
Night, yeah. So September 25th. And I've got Erna Ferry singing on that too, who's the blues singer from Palmerston North, who works with the band, and she'll do a couple of things for Chris because he plays really good harmonica as well, other than sing. Yeah.
Wow.
But blues harmonica, which is quite wild because, like, most people, associate blues harp with the male genre and not a female.
Yeah,
so that's pretty wild.
The spot like a balmy breeze on an island bay. You hit the spot like a cool mint julep on a summer's day. You hit a new high. In my estimation, I had to fold because you got so much on the board. You hit the spot like the first embrace when the night is tired. You hit the spot like a pipe and slippers by the fireside. Mandel, I frankly don't know exactly what it is you got, but ooh, you hit the spot.